the new death roll. For the first time since entering the quadrant, the names called every morning for the last week haven't been cadets, but active riders and flyers on the front lines, fighting to fortify the villages along the Stonewater River, trying to divert the Venon's attention from our valley where 4 new dragons have hatched. Don't say Mira, don't say Mira, don't say Mira. It's become my personal prayer to whatever god will listen while standing in formation. I feel so fucking useless. Unlike the last 2 weeks, there's no luminary to fetch, no wards to fail at. There's a real war down there, and we're up here learning history and physics. We lost 2 yesterday. Arik tenses in the row ahead. Rhiannon glances back over her shoulder at me, sorrow haunting her eyes for a heartbeat before she composes herself with a grace I can never seem to manage, and straightens her shoulders at Sawyer's side. 2 riders in 1 day is unfathomable in active service. The entirety of the Aratian Quadrant will be dead in less than 2 months at this rate.
I think that's Isar's brother, Riddick says from behind me.
Second wing. We both glance left, past third wing. Isar Panya bows her head from the middle of her squad in tail section. I blink back the burning in my eyes, and my fingers squeeze tight around the conduit in my left hand. He was a lieutenant, Imogen says quietly. 2 years ahead of us, Quinn adds. Great sense of humor. This is cruel, I whisper. Telling us that our siblings, our friends are dead this way is fucking cruel. It's harsher than anything we've been put through at Bezgaeth. It's no different than morning formation, Vissia says over her shoulder.
Yes, it is, Sloane argues.
Hearing someone from a different wing died, or hell, even our squad, isn't the same as being told your brother's gone. Her voice cracks. A lump swells painfully in my throat. Brennan is inside, no doubt arguing with the assembly about where to find game for the tsunami of predators we've brought here over the last month, or coordinating shipments from the now-functioning forge. He's safe. Every commissioned rider that isn't here teaching has been sent in shifts to man the outposts along the cliffs of Draelor, like Zayden, Garrick, Heaton, and Emery, or to hold the front, like Mira. Devera clears her throat and exchanges the role for the one Jacinia holds. My shoulders dip, a breath of relief clouding the freezing air. Mira's alive, or at least she was last night when the rotational rider brought the news in. Morning formation doesn't scare me when it comes to Zayden. I'd know instantly if he... Gods, I can't even think of it. Krissa Verlin, Devera begins reading from the commissioned flyer's roll.
Micah Renfrew.
Micah!
A low guttural scream erupts from our right, and every head turns to a drift near the center of the flyer's formation as a guy falls to his knees. The rest of his drift turns, covering him with comforting arms.
I'm never going to get used to hearing them do that, Arik mutters, shifting his weight.
Hearing them what? Sloane counters. Have emotions.
Sorengil knows what I mean. You've been out there, Arik says to me.
And I cried like an infant when Liam died. Turn around.
Shit. Isn't that at odds with everything I told Rhiannon when we fought beside the gauntlet?
The deaths are supposed to harden us. Why do I agree with Sloane on this one? There's something infinitely more human about the way the flyers react. Even the way they conduct their own threshing at Cliffsbane is considerably less cruel than what we endure at Bezgaeth. Now I can't decide if it makes us stronger or simply harder.
And Alvar Gilona,
Devera concludes.
We commend their souls to Malik.
I glance right, just like I do every morning, and see Kat's posture soften. Her eyes close briefly from her drift on the closest edge of their formation.
Serena is still alive too. She looks over at me and I nod, which she returns, even if it's curt. It's our one daily moment of truce, the only time we seem to recognize each other as little sisters instead of enemies. And it's over in less than a heartbeat. Her gaze shifts into a glare as formation breaks. Swear to Amari, Kat's hell-bent on making my life as miserable as fucking possible every other minute of the day and tries twice as hard on the day Zayden is here. Her loathing makes Sloane look downright warm and fuzzy. And worse, her entire drift seems focused on our squad, with five of the remaining six, Marin being the exception, blaming me for Luella's death and loudly proclaiming that I chose the rider over the flyer. The tall guy with shoulder-length brown hair, pretty sure his name is Traker, swung for Riddick on the Valley's flight field 2 days ago, and ended up with Rhiannon's fist in his face when he ran his mouth about her particular border village turning away refugees. His lip is still scabbed. Guess our little hike up the cliffs didn't bond us like they'd hoped.
What did she do this morning? Rhiannon asks, looking Kat's direction with a raised brow.
Knocked on my door before dawn, then got all annoyed when I actually answered the damn thing. Just the thought of it has my hand warming along the conduit.
Felix has replaced the alloy in my conduit twice this week, but at least my inability to control my own power is helping imbue alloy for daggers, so in a way, I'm helping the war effort, since my attempt at activating the wardstone failed.
I roll my right shoulder, hoping to ease the ache now that I've ditched the sling, but it still protests.
Is she running out of bullshit to pull on you? Riddick asks as we start to move toward the door.
It takes twice as long to get out of formation here than at Bazgaeth, considering Ryerson House was built for keeping people out, not letting them in.
That doesn't sound as bad as Saturday when she posted that list of all the flyers Mira has taken out over the years.
That day had been a treat, and definitely soothed relations between riders and flyers. We'd had at least a dozen more fights than usual break out in the hallways. She was wearing a Devarelli silk robe when I answered the door. I grabbed my pack from the ground and swing it over my shoulders, grimacing at the weight. How do I know it was Devarelli silk, you ask? Because it was pretty much see-through.
Oh, damn, Sawyer cringes. Why would she? Are you?
Rhiannon, Quinn, and even Imogen stare at him as the first years head inside.
Think about where she sleeps.
Riddick smacks the back of Sawyer's head.
Ow! Right. You're still in Ryerson's room,
Sawyer says slowly, blatantly turning his back on Kat as she walks by with her drift.
I forgot.
Roll has you listed in Rhiannon's room. Bringing an extra 100 cadets here meant doubling up, and technically, I shouldn't be sleeping in a lieutenant's room. Not that either of us care or leadership is going to say anything to the man who owns the house.
Which I appreciate, Rhiannon rests her hand over her heart, as it gives me a little privacy whenever Tara and I actually get time to see each other.
Happy to help, I crack a smile.
I have to give it to the girl,
Imogen shakes her head, sighing as she looks past me toward Kat and her drift.
She's tenacious.
Every head swivels in her direction.
Hey, Imogen puts her hands up. I'm Team Violet, just saying that I bet if Zayden ever calls it quits, you'd fight to get him back, too.
Ugh, when she puts it that way.
Do not humanize that walking piece of terror, Rhiannon counters. I climbed the entire cliff with her, and I'm starting to think we'd be better off having Jack Barlow up here instead.
He's one person I'm glad stayed behind, no matter how nice he'd been to me. I still don't trust that guy. Never will.
Is Kat being Kat again? Bodhi asks, walking over as the courtyard empties.
It's fine. She's fine.
I'm fine. I shake my head, lying through my teeth so he doesn't tell Zayden that I can't handle myself.
Rhiannon and I have somewhere to be.
We do?
Rhi's eyebrows rise.
We do.
Right, he turns to Rhiannon.
Well, Professor Trissa just chose your second years for a new class, tomorrow at 2 in the valley.
Trissa? She's the petite, quiet member of the assembly.
We'll be there, Ree promises. Snow falls in Aracia earlier than it does at Besgaeth, and by the first week in November, a thin blanket of white covers the rapidly growing town but not the valley above, thanks to a combination of the natural thermal heat of the mountain range and the magic channeled by griffin and dragon alike, which only seems to be increasing. I glance toward the worn path at the end of the valley that leads down to Ryerson House, anxiety churning in my stomach.
Well, this is awkward.
Sawyer folds his arms and levels a bored look across the 15 feet of valley grass that separate the second-year riders in our squad from the second-year flyers in Cat's Drift. Looks like we've both been summoned. But if the line of dragons standing behind us and the griffins behind the flyers can manage not to attack each other, surely we can be civil.
Agreed.
Civil is overrated.
And Darna notes, flexing her claws in the grass.
I've never tasted griffin.
We do not eat our allies,
Taryn lectures.
Find another snack.
Looking right, I catch Sawyer glancing between Andarna and Taryn over and over, like he's comparing the differences.
Don't worry. I feel like I see double all the time.
It's not that. Did she grow again? He asks, pulling at his collar.
I feel like she grew.
I think a few inches this week, I nod. We had to add a link to her harness on each side.
Soon I'll be able to fly without it,
Andarna notes with a huff. Riddick pivots to make his own observations, smiling up at Andarna.
The little mini-tern is becoming ferocious, isn't she?
I am no one's miniature.
And Darna's head darts toward him and she snaps her teeth less than a foot in front of his face. My heart bolts.
And Darna, I shout, turning quickly to put myself between her and Riddick as she withdraws.
Damn,
Riddick throws his hands up, his hair blowing back from the force of what can only be described as the frustrated huff of Tarn's sigh.
Big, Riddick blurts. Meant to say big.
No more spending time with Sigale, I point at her, stopping short of tapping her chin before looking up at Taryn, who's lowered his head over her like he might actually put her between his teeth and yank her off the field like a puppy.
I mean it. She's rubbing off on you.
I could only be so lucky,
and Darna lifts her head, preening, and Taryn grumbles something in his own language.
Holy shit, Marin mutters from behind me.
Sorry about that, adolescence, I shrug at Riddick.
Still can't believe Feathertails are kids, Sawyer says, taking a step away from Andarna.
Or that you bonded two black dragons. That one caught me off guard, too. I glance toward the path again, but there's no sign of Rhiannon. If Professor Trissa gets here before Ree, she'll be in major trouble. Trissa might be the softest spoken member of the assembly, but she's also the sharpest tongued when pissed, according to what Zayden told me before he flew out for the border again this morning with Heaton and Emery. At least we'd had a night together. The third years went too, patrolling the cliffs of Draelor for Wyvern and Navarian riders. Wyvern we wouldn't have to worry about if I hadn't failed to raise the wards.
Which part's worse?
Riddick muses, tapping the dimple in his chin.
Them silently glaring at us like we have any fucking clue why they're up here too? Or their menacing escorts?
His gaze locks on the griffins standing guard over their flyers. Dajalair wobbles slightly, still clearly not adjusted to the altitude. I have yet to see a single griffin fly in the week that they've been here.
Both. Sawyer unbuttons his flight jacket. Is it me? Or is it getting hotter up here?
Hotter, I agree, breathing a sigh of relief when Rhiannon appears, flashing me an excited smile as she hikes toward us from the other side of the field. I add to Riddick. And be nice. I like Marin.
I like Marin too, but her best friend needs to get tossed off this cliff, Sawyer notes under his breath.
The Griffins are up and about faster than I thought, Riddick observes. Most of them were still sleeping off the altitude a few days ago.
The Griffin standing behind Traeger, the guy with the shoulder-length brown hair and crooked smile, notices Riddick's appraisal and snaps his sharp 2-foot beak in warning. Traeger smirks. Atrum blows a hot gust of steam over our heads, blasting all three flyers in the face with not just steam, but a healthy layer of...
Is that snot?
In their defense, we brought our own escorts, I note, as Andarna stalks forward, her claws sinking into the grass on either side of me in clear warning. Her talons grow sharper by the day, and she fully extended her wing for the first time this morning, making her extra bold this afternoon.
Elders say I'll be flying within a few weeks.
A growl aimed at the Griffin works up her throat, and her beady eyes flare then blink.
You're baring your teeth, aren't you?
I don't bother hiding my smile.
I don't trust them, she answers, especially the one in the center who looks to be plotting your death.
Don't let her bother you. Kat's eyes are indeed narrowed on me as usual.
She bothers you.
Andarna takes a single step forward, putting her chest scales just over my head.
And she'll get used to it, or she'll kill her.
Tarn answers from behind us, where the other three, no, four, dragons wait now that Fierge has arrived.
Either is acceptable.
I thought you were against us killing allies. I glance over my shoulder as his shade envelops me thanks to the afternoon sun. Maybe it's Sleeg moving closer on her right, but there's a reddish sheen to Andarna's scales, and I can't help but wonder when that shimmer will dull to a shade more like Tarn.
She has yet to prove herself an ally, Tarn notes.
She still blames me for Luella's death. Hey, while we're just standing here, Sawyer rubs the back of his neck and his cheeks redden. I lift my eyebrows at the clearly unfinished question. I was wondering if you, he cringes, then sighs.
Never mind.
He wants you to teach him how to sign. Riddick finishes, rocking back on his heels in clear boredom.
Riddick!
Sawyer glares his way.
What?
You made that way more painful than it had to be. For fuck's sake, it was like you were leading up to asking her out or something. He visibly shudders.
What if he had been? I counter.
Then I'd be stuck cleaning little pieces of him off our shared floor when Ryerson ripped him to shreds. Riddick shakes his head.
So messy.
First, Zayden has more than enough confidence to survive me being asked out. I glance up at Sawyer. And yes, I'll teach you sign.
Why would that be embarrassing?
I should have learned years ago.
Sawyer drops his hand.
And obvious reasons.
I'm not fluent enough to make a good teacher, apparently. Riddick rolls his eyes.
You'd teach me the sign for sex and tell me it was hello just to see what happened when I used it,
Sawyer fires back.
What? I'm not a total dick.
A smile curves Riddick's mouth. I would have waited until you asked about the word for dinner. That way, when you asked her if she wanted to grab a bite with you, oh, I blink, putting the pieces together. Jacinia.
Don't worry, Sawyer. I've got you.
Rhee signs fluently, too. So do Arik and Quinn and...
Everyone but me.
Sawyer sighs, his shoulders dipping.
Almost didn't make it in time, Rhiannon says, slightly out of breath as she reaches us.
Traeger's eyes narrow even further on Rhee as Professor Trissa rounds the corner behind her.
How's the lip?
Rhiannon asks, winking at Traeger. He moves to step forward, but Marin blocks him, shaking her head.
I would have covered for you. Did your family get settled? I ask Rhee.
They'd arrived late last night, travel weary, and with only the items they could fit in a narrow wagon capable of making it up the precipice pass, the winding trading route up the northeast side of the cliffs of Draelor, bordering the Deccanshire province.
Yeah,
Rhee grins and drops her pack in the surprisingly supple grass next to mine.
I swear it's like the seasons are reversing up in this valley.
Thank your brother for me. He assigned their houses right next to each other near the market square, and they've already picked out a spot to set up shop.
Will do. And Lucas? Just the thought of her nephew's perfect chubby cheeks has me smiling wide.
Still the cutest boy ever.
She unbuttons her flight jacket and shrugs it off her shoulders.
They're exhausted, but they're safe. And the fact that I get to see them whenever I want now, amazing. Plus, I got to show off my signet, and they were appropriately awed.
That's phenomenal. I'm really happy for you. My posture relaxes, and I take a truly deep breath. Families have been arriving in Aracia for the last week, led in small, unnoticeable groups by the members of the Revolution who delivered their offers of sanctuary. Riddick's dad should arrive any day, but we haven't had word from Sawyer's parents yet.
You might be wondering why we're meeting in the valley, Professor Trissa says.
Her breath's perfectly even as she reaches into her pack and pulls out 7 printed illustrations, then hands them out to the 7 of us. Another smile tugs at my lips. Jacinia and the others got the printing press up and running. The illustrations, a depiction of a Tirish rune, not unlike those in the weaving book Zayden left me when he graduated. After a closer look at the illustration, I recognize it. The series of graduated squares is nearly identical to the hilt of the dagger on my right hip.
As you are currently the top squad and drift, we have chosen your group as our test of sorts.
Professor Trissa steps back so she can see both lines of us.
You can channel? She asks the flyers.
About half power since yesterday morning, Kat answers.
Mind work? The professor asks with a tone of curiosity.
Not yet, Marin answers.
But soon, Kat says, staring straight at me. The drifts are getting stronger every day.
As if I'd forget what it was like to have her running amok in my head.
So back to arts and crafts hour? Riddick asks, folding his arms. Who knows how mage lights are powered? Professor Trissa asks, ignoring his question and reaching into her pack.
She removes 8 small wooden boards, no bigger than a plate. She puts them in the center of our little standoff.
Well?
Lesser magic, Marin answers.
The ones you create yourself, Professor Trissa nods. What about the ones that run continuously in, say, the first year dorms? The ones that work before you can channel.
Every rider looks at me.
They're powered by the excess magic both we and our dragons channel, I answer. It comes off us naturally like waves of body heat, but it's such a small amount that we don't even notice it.
Exactly, the professor agrees. And what is it that makes that kind of magic possible? Magic tied to objects instead of a wielder?
She looks over at us with expectant dark brown eyes, then rubs the bridge of her nose.
Gods, I thought Felix was joking. Sorengil, you're practically covered in them.
I glance down, glimpsing the shimmer of my dragon scale armor beneath the V-neck of my uniform top, then lock onto the daggers Zayden gave me.
Runes?
Runes, Professor Trissa confirms. Runes aren't just decorative. They're strands of magic pulled from our power, woven into geometric patterns for specific uses, then placed into an object, either for immediate work or usage at a later date. We call the process tempering.
That's not possible, Marin shakes her head. Magic is only wielded.
It's still wielded, Professor Trissa all but sighs in disappointment at our ignorance. But just like we store food for winter, a wielder can temper a rune using as much or as little power as they choose, then place it into something.
She bends down and picks up one of the boards and waves it in our general direction.
Like wood or metal or whatever object the wielder chooses, that rune will activate when triggered and perform whatever action it was tempered for. Unlike alloy, which houses power, runes are tempered with power for specific actions. Rhi and I exchange a confused glance.
I see we'll need some convincing.
Professor Trissa drops the board and lifts her hands.
First, you separate a strand of your power.
She reaches forward and pinches air between her thumb and forefinger,
which can be the most complicated step to learn, honestly.
Is she pretending?
Riddick whispers. Professor Trissa shoots him a sharp-eyed glare.
Just because you can't see my power doesn't mean I can't. Or are you unfamiliar with the process of grounding? Like your shields, your power is only visible to you when you give it form, whether it's the shape of your signet as a rider or lesser magics, which you are all capable of.
Point taken, Riddick puts his empty hand up in defeat.
Power can be shaped.
Her hands move quickly, pulling at pieces of air, then using her fingers to form invisible shapes. Circles? Squares? Was that a triangle? It's hard to tell when we can't see.
Every shape has meaning. The points where we tie the power change that meaning, all of which you will need to memorize.
She reaches into the air again, then creates a rhombus?
The shapes we combine layer the meanings, change the rune. Will it activate immediately, sit in suspended state? How many times can it activate before the rune depletes? It's all decided here.
She seems to flip whatever she's working on, then pulls another string and does something.
Fucking weird,
Riddick mumbles under his breath. It's like when you're little and you ask your parents to drink from the teacup knowing there's no actual tea in it.
Rhiannon shushes him.
Once it's ready,
Professor Trissa bends and grabs the board, then stands.
We place the rune. Until it's placed, it has no meaning, no purpose, and will fade quickly. It's tempering the rune that makes it an active magic.
She grabs what I assume is the rune she's been tempering with her right hand, then pushes her palm into the wooden board.
This particular one is a simple heating rune.
That was simple? Sawyer asks. The board smokes, and I lean forward, my eyes widening.
And there you have it.
She turns the front of the board toward the flyers, then shows us.
Once you understand which shapes combine to make what symbols, the combinations are nearly limitless.
My jaw hangs open for a moment. The shapes have been burned into what I would have said was a decorative rune about 10 minutes ago. I glance down at the illustration in my hands and wonder what the hell the dagger on my hip is supposed to do. Every shape has meaning. The points where we tie the power change that meaning. I take another look at the multifaceted shape before she flips the board, holding it to face skyward, and my eyes widen with realization.
It's a logosyllabic language, I blurt, like Old Lucerish or Moranian.
Professor Trissa lifts her eyebrows as she looks my way.
Very similar, yes.
Her mouth curves into a smile.
That's right, you can read Old Lucerish, too.
She nods.
Impressive.
Thank you.
She's ours, Riddick says to the flyers, pointing at me.
Not sure I'm anything to brag about, considering I barely passed the history quiz this morning. At least I'm solid in math, but then again, math doesn't change overnight.
You're an ice wielder, are you not?
Professor Trissa asks Riddick.
He nods. And she holds out her hand. Riddick uncorks the skin strapped at his hip, then draws the water out from the mouthpiece in a frozen cylinder before walking it to Professor Trissa.
She places the ice on the board, and my gasp isn't the only one heard, as the ice dissolves in a matter of seconds and water drips from the sizzling wood.
Be careful of the medium you choose to hold the rune. A bit more power, and that board would have gone up in flames.
Why does no one teach this? Marin asks, glancing from her parchment to the board.
It's a skill the Tirish once controlled and perfected. but it was banned a couple hundred years after the unification of Navarre, even though many of our outposts and Bazgaiath itself were built upon them. Why? She lifts her brows. I'm so glad you asked. You see, riders are naturally more powerful, given the amount of magic we channel and the signets we wield. Traeger rolls his eyes. But runes are the great equalizer, Professor Trissa continues, setting the board on the grass now that it's stopped sizzling. A rune is only limited to how much power you choose to temper, how long you want it to last, and how many uses it has before it depletes. They banned runes so they wouldn't fall into the wrong hands. She glances at the flyers. Your hands, specifically. Get good enough at runes, and you can compete with a fair amount of signets.
So you want us to temper this? Kat asks, studying the illustration with an arched eyebrow. Out of magic.
I hate to admit it, but I'm with Kat on this one. And by the looks on the faces around me, we all are. Even Rhi is glancing at the drawing with trepidation. This feels overwhelming.
Yes, with the power you'll learn to separate from yourselves, just like I showed you.
Professor Trissa opens her pack and dumps another pile of boards onto the first. She made it look so easy.
We're going to start with a simple unlocking rune. Easy to build, easy to test.
She glances between our lines.
We can all unlock doors with lesser magic, Traeger notes.
Of course you can, Professor Trissa sighs. But an unlocking rune can be used by someone who doesn't possess lesser magic. Now let's go. I expect your first runes woven before sunset.
There's no way we're going to learn how to do that before sunset, Sawyer argues.
Nonsense. Every marked one has learned a simple unlocking rune the first day.
No pressure, Rhi mutters. Sloane and Imogen can do this? I ask.
Naturally, Professor Trissa shakes her head at me.
This is why Zayden had me practicing runes with fabric. Is that man ever going to learn to just tell me things outright? Or am I always going to have to dig information out of him?
I'll answer any question you ask, I mock under my breath. It's hard to ask questions I don't even know exist.
You're supposed to be the best of your year, so stop gawking and get to work, Professor Trissa lectures. The first thing you'll need to do is learn to separate a piece of your own power. Let it fill your mind, then reach in and visualize plucking a thread of it from the current.
Rhiannon, Sawyer, Riddick, and I exchange a series of what-the-fuck glances that are echoed by the flyers across from us.
Advice? I ask Taryn and Darna.
Don't blow anything up.
Taryn shifts his weight behind me.
At least blowing something up would be interesting,
and Darna notes, eliciting a growl from Taryn.
Now, Trissa demands, then holds up a finger. Oh, and be careful. Power gets temperamental when you pull from it. That's why your bondeds are here. The closer the source, the easier it is for the first time.
She looks us over, then folds her arms across her chest.
Well, what are you waiting for?
I shut my eyes and envision my archives and the swirling power that surrounds it, the blazing, molten stream of Taryn's power that flows behind his giant door, looks capable of consuming me. But the pearlescent flow of Andarna's power just beyond the windows feels approachable. Steadying my breath, I reach for Andarna's power.
Boom! An explosion sounds and my eyes fly open, every head whipping towards Sawyer as he flies backward.
He lands just short of Sleeg's claws, a scorch mark left smoking in the grass where he'd been standing.
And that is why we're having this class outdoors, Professor Trissa shakes her head. On your feet, try again.
Riddick walks back and helps Sawyer to his feet. And then we do just that. Try again, and again, and again. Before sunset, I manage to weave an unlocking rune.
but I'm not the first.
Cat has that honor, and unlike the rest of us, no scorch marks beneath her feet.
An excerpt from Captain Lara Durrell's Guide to Vanquishing the Venon, property of Cliffsbane Academy. It is somewhat fitting that the only weapon capable of killing a dark wielder is the same thing that drove them to soullessness. Power. Chapter 46.
Runes? Zayden asks a few days later, leaning over my shoulder as I sit at the desk in his room, practicing today's assignment, a triangular piece of torture that's supposed to somehow boost hearing.
He picks up one of my 5 discarded attempts, burned into hand-sized wooden discs, and I breathe deeply, savoring the scent of soap on his freshly washed skin. A private bathing chamber is definitely one of the perks of sleeping in his room.
We're the trial squad,
I meant to tell you last night. I take the delicate strand of pearlescent power and bend it into the 3rd shape in the pattern Professor Trissa gave us for homework. Then let it burn brightly in front of me while I gently reach for another. Now that I know what to look for, I see the flow of power clearly before me, somehow both solid and insubstantial, glowing strands that flex under my touch. Seeing it doesn't make pulling individual strands any easier, though.
I meant to tell you a lot last night, too, he said, setting the disc back down on the desk with the others.
But once I found you in bed, my mouth was otherwise occupied. My lips curve at the memory as I form the next triangle, this one smaller, and set it within the larger ones floating in front of me. He's been gone more than he's been home, running the weapons from our forge to the front lines near the Stonewater River and filling Takaris's armory. This last trip lasted an extra day when he and Garrick found themselves caught in an attack.
Do you want my help? He asks, skimming his mouth down the side of my neck.
That is, my breath catches when he reaches the collar of my armor.
Not helping.
Pity. He kisses the side of my neck, then stands, leaving me to my homework. Good thing, too, since I have class in a few minutes. This is why you left me that book in Navarre, isn't it? I take the next strand and form the circle that should stabilize the shapes within and place it around the rune.
That should do it.
I wanted you to have a head start, he says, picking up Warwick's journal from where I abandon it on the desk and thumbing through it.
Thank you. This is impossible to read, Zayden mutters, closing the journal and setting it back on the desk before walking to where his uniforms hang next to mine in a large armoire.
I grin at the domesticity of it. There's nothing I wouldn't do to keep it just like this between us. My father taught me, I shrug, examining my rune for anything I might have missed. And Dane and I used it as a secret code when we were kids.
Never pictured Atos as the old Lucerish type, Zayden notes.
Picking up the wooden disc in my left hand, I gently move the buzzing strands of power, pressing them into the disc.
Much better than the last 5.
You put runes into my daggers, I say, turning in the wooden chair. My lips part, and I blatantly ogle Zayden as he pulls his uniform from the armoire, a towel wrapped around his hips. How did I not notice he'd been basically naked behind me this whole time? Such a missed opportunity.
Keep looking at me like that and you're not making it to class, he warns, his eyes darkening as he crosses the floor and tosses his clothing on the bed.
I force myself to turn away. Brennan warned Zayden that the first time I was late for class, because of my sleeping arrangements, I'd be back in my assigned room. You put an unlocking rune into my dagger, didn't you? I ask, sliding all the discs besides the one I just finished into my pack, ignoring Warwick's journal, which mocks me from the edge of the desk.
That's how we got out of the interrogation chamber.
A variation of it, yes. Holding the best rune of my attempts, I lift my pack to my shoulders
and slip my arms through the straps as I stand, turning to face him. His torso is still gloriously bare, but unfortunately, or fortunately for my schedule, he has pants on. Care to elaborate? To my consternation, he goes for his socks instead of a shirt. You can do the unlocking rune. It's simple enough, he shrugs. I added an element of need into the rune. So you can't walk up to any door and open it just because you want to. But if the dagger's on your body and picks up on the need for a door to unlock, it will. If you'd made it up to the forge at Bezgaeth, it would have opened to your need. Sitting on the edge of the bed, he puts on his boots. I had the key the entire time? My eyebrows rise, as if I didn't already love him. I would have fallen right then. You did. Are you feeling adventurous with questions today? A corner of his mouth quirks. I grip the disc and sink my teeth into my lower lip. The problem with being happy amidst the utter chaos we've caused is that I'm terrified to ask even a single question that might jeopardize it. What's the rune on the stone you keep by the bed? That's what it is, right? Yes, a complicated one at that. He sits up and reaches for the little gray stone, then offers it to me as he stands. There's not a person alive who knows how to replicate this. Colonel Mari was the last. Liam and Sloane's mom. I take the palm-sized stone and study the intricate lines of the rune. It had to have been giant when she tempered it. I assume so. She must have collapsed it to fit when placing them into the stones. Stones? I look up at him. As in more than one? 107, he answers, watching me with expectation. The marked ones, he wants me to ask. What does it do? I rub my thumb over the blackened design. Did. It's a protection rune, but it was only intended to be used once. He runs his hand through his damp hair and pauses. As you get better with runes, you can pull elements into them. Things like strands of hair, or even other full runes for locating things, or protecting them. This particular rune was made to protect someone of my father's bloodline. You. I look up and hand the stone back. You're his only child, right? Zayden nods. Each of the children of the officers were given them before our parents left for the Battle of Aratia. We were told to carry them at all times, and we did, even to the execution. His fingers brush mine as he takes the stone. I damn near stop breathing, keeping my eyes on his. It was designed to counter the signet of the rider whose dragon would kill them. He swallows. But it could only activate when killed by dragonfire. Which is the primary method of execution for traitors, I whisper. He nods. I kept it close in my fist, we all did, as we stood there, watching our parents put into lines for execution. And the second they were, his shoulders rise up as he takes a deep breath. Burned heat raced up my arm. The next time I felt anything like that was after threshing. My eyes widen, and I close my hand over his. The rebellion relics? That must be why the swirling marks always start on the marked one's arms. He nods. Our parents knew they'd die one way or another, and the last thing they did was make sure we were protected. I keep it purely for sentimental reasons. Leaning toward me, he kisses my forehead, then turns away, putting the stone on his bedside table. I like it when you ask me questions, he says, leaning over to grab his uniform shirt. Anything else you want to know? It's on the tip of my tongue to question why he didn't tell me about the deal he made with my mother and ask if it influenced his feelings for me. But then he stands, and my gaze catches on those silver scars on his back, the scars she put there. And I just can't ask. He told me that he's loved me since the first time we kissed. That should be enough. I shouldn't need to know anything more about the deal than what she said to me. Or maybe I don't want to, not if there's any chance it could shake our relationship. Violence? He tugs his shirt on and turns.
Nothing else to ask, I force a smile.
Everything all right?
Two lines appear between his brows. Bodhi mentioned that Kat isn't making it easy on you, and you've had a couple of lightning strikes. Bodhi needs to butt out.
There's no chance I'm letting Zayden worry about me before heading out for multiple days.
Rising up on my toes, I kiss him softly. I'll see you tonight. Disappointment flashes through his eyes right before he cups the back of my neck and slants his mouth over mine for another blissful second, then pulls back.
You're close, but you need a directional cue for that one.
My rune is great, and I'll ask for help if I need it.
I kiss him quickly just because I can, then rush out the door so I can make it to class on time. The second I'm in the hallway, I lift the disc to my ear. Noise rushes in, footsteps pounding above me, doors closing ahead of me, people shouting beneath me. There's too much input to make any sense of it.
I hate it when he's right, I mutter as I skid into class. Naturally, Kat has tempered her rune perfectly when I get there, which makes me almost want to ask for Zayden's help. But he's already gone before I'm done with my classes for the day.
We've given you 2 weeks to figure out how to integrate peacefully, and you have yet to do so, much to our disappointment. Devera lectures us the next week from the side of the center mat, Emeterio and one of the flyer professors by her side. The sparring gym is only a fraction of the size of Beskayet's, fitting 9 mats total. And it's packed with every cadet in Erasia standing shoulder to shoulder, including the flyers. Until now, we've only been put together for rune lessons in very small increments and mealtimes, which usually end with at least one thrown punch.
What the hell do they expect? Rhiannon folds her arms next to me. We've been killing each other for centuries, and we're supposed to, what, weave flowers into each other's hair and confess our deepest, darkest secrets all because they gave us a luminary and hiked a cliff?
It's a little tense, I agree, holding the conduit in my right hand and rolling my aching shoulder, hoping it will forgive me for daring to sleep on it wrong. I have a lesson with Felix in 2 days, and I'm cramming as much power into the little glass orb as I can. My power's been flaring all too frequently, with the flyers hurling insults every chance they get, insinuating that I dropped Luella to her death instead of Vissia. There's a clear divide in our ranks, a sea of black on my right and a swath of tan on the left, with a wide strip of bare floor between us. More than a dozen cadets wear bruises from the brawl that erupted yesterday in the Great Hall between Third Wing and Two Drifts.
Yesterday's outburst of violence was absolutely unacceptable, the flyer's professor starts, her auburn braid sliding over her shoulder as she turns her head, addressing all cadets, not just the flyers. Working together is what's going to make a difference in this war, and it has to start here.
She turns her finger on the rider cadets.
Good luck with that, Riddick says under his breath.
We'll be making significant changes, Devera announces. You will no longer be separated for classes.
My stomach pitches, and a mumble of discontent rolls through the gym.
Which means,
Devera raises her voice, quieting our side of the makeshift formation,
you will respect one another as equals. We may be in Erasia, but as of today, we've decided the Dragon Rider's Codex still applies to every cadet. And as their guests, the flyer professor says, placing a hand on her ample hip, all flyers will abide by it.
A disgruntled murmur rolls through their half.
Is that clear?
Yes, Professor Kiandra, they respond in unison.
Damn, that's kind of impressive, even if they do sound like infantry.
But we acknowledge that we cannot move forward without addressing the hostility among you, Emeterio says, his gaze shifting between the groups. At Beskayet, we had a method for addressing grievances between cadets. You may ask for a challenge, a sparring match that ends when one of you is unconscious or taps out.
Or dies, Arik adds.
The flyers collectively gasp, and the majority of us roll our eyes.
They wouldn't last a day at Bezgaeth.
Without killing your opponent, Amaterio continues, talking directly at Arik before moving on. For the next 6 hours, every request between cadets of the same year for challenge will be granted. You will address your grievances once on these mats, and then you will put them behind you.
They're going to let us beat the shit out of them? Riddick asks quietly.
I think so, Sloane whispers in response. It's going to be a phenomenal afternoon, Imogen grins, cracking her knuckles.
They've been trained to fight Venon, I remind them. I wouldn't underestimate them. When it comes to Signets, we can blast them out of the fucking skies, but hand to hand, there's a good chance we're outmatched.
You may only challenge one opponent, and each cadet may only be challenged once,
Amaterio says, holding up his forefinger and lifting his thick brows.
So choose carefully, because tomorrow the rider or flyer you hold contempt for may be off limits.
Oh, shit. My stomach drops. There's only one reason someone couldn't call a challenge, but they wouldn't. Would they?
Challenges between squad mates are forbidden under the Codex, Tavera explains to flyers, then turns to us. And tomorrow, each squad of riders will absorb one drift of flyers.
Guess they would. Anger flushes my cheeks, and Rhiannon and I exchange a perturbed glance,
which is mirrored by everyone in our squad, especially Vissia. Note that I said absorb, Devera stares pointedly at us. You will not be teamed up or partnered with. You will fuse. You will meld. You will unify.
This goes against everything we've been taught. Squads are sacred. Squads are family. Squads are born after parapet and forged through the gauntlet, threshing and war games. Squads aren't merged unless they're dissolved due to deaths. And we're the Iron Squad. We do not bend, and we definitely do not blend.
And if you don't, Professor Keandra's tone softens as her gaze sweeps over the gym. We will fail when it's time for combat. We will die.
We'll take your requests now, Amaterio says, concluding the lecture portion of today's festivities.
Lines form for those requesting challenges, and it doesn't surprise me that most of the queue is wearing brown. They have far more reason to hate us than most of us do to hate them.
We are the Iron Squad, and we'll act like it, Rhiannon orders as the last of the line approaches Amaterio. We stick together and travel mat to mat with any challenge leveled on us.
All 11 of us agree. The first challenges are called, and I'm not surprised when Traeger names Rhiannon to come to the mat. No doubt he's still pissed about the punch she delivered on the flight field. She wins in less than 5 minutes, and his lip is bleeding again. The third-year leader from Cat's Drift, the stocky one with the necklace of scars, Bragan, knocks Quinn unconscious with a punch combination that leaves my mouth hanging. Once Imogen is called to the mat by Knave, another third-year in Cat's Drift, with short strawberry blonde hair and deep-set eyes, I sense the pattern.
This is about me, I say quietly to Rhiannon when Imogen lands a solid kick to the other girl's head.
That makes it about us, she responds. Please tell me you're wrapped and wearing your armor.
I nod. Imogen and Knave exchange precise, calculated blows until Devera calls it a draw after they're both bleeding.
Catriona Cordella and Violet Sorengale, Devera announces. Disarm and take the mat.
Don't do this. Marin tries to talk Kat out of it, but there's nothing but determination in her narrowed gaze.
A fucking course, I hand the conduit to Rhiannon.
Why am I not surprised, Kat? Imogen glares across the mat before turning toward me. It's fine,
predictable, but fine. One by one, I unsheathe all 13 of my weapons and hand them to her.
She's got at least 5 inches on you, so watch for her reach, Rhiannon says quietly.
From what I remember, she's quick on the attack and won't leave you much time to react. So commit to your moves, don't hesitate, Imogen adds.
All right, I breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth, fighting like hell to steady the nerves that have my stomach doing somersaults.
If I'd known this was where today was headed, I would have acted earlier, maybe laced her breakfast with the fonally I saw growing on the ridge just beneath the valley.
You've got this, Rhiannon says with a nod. You were trained by the best. Satan, I whisper, wishing he was here and not on the border.
Me, she nudges me with her elbow and forces a smile.
Violet, Sloan moves to Imogen's side. Do me a favor and kick her ass.
My mouth tugs into a real half smile, and I nod at her before stepping onto the mat. Guess nothing unites foes like a common enemy, and for some reason, Kat has decided I'm hers. The mat has the same density as the ones at Besgaeth, the same feel under my boots as I walk to the center, where Kat waits with a malevolent smirk.
Scratch her eyes out, Andarna suggests. Really, the eyes are the softest tissue. Just jab your thumbs in there.
Andarna, use some common sense,
Tarn snaps. The kneecaps are a much easier target. Quiet time now. I slam my shields up, muting Tarn and Andarna as much as possible.
No weapons, no signets, Devera says. Match ends when one of you is unconscious or taps out.
Kat finishes without taking her eyes off me.
We know.
Begin, Devera steps off the mat, and I block out the noise around me, giving all my focus to Kat as she takes a familiar fighting stance. I do the same, keeping my body loose and ready for movement. If she's quick on the attack like Imogen said, then I'll need to play defense.
This is for Luella, she comes at me with a combination of punches that I block with my forearms, shifting my body so the blows glance off without their full impact.
It's easy, like I know the choreography, like it's muscle memory. Her stance adjusts, and I jump back a second before she kicks out. Connecting only with air, her balance falters as I land, and she stumbles sideways.
Holy shit.
She fights like Zayden. He trained both of us.
An excerpt from Venin, A Compendium. By Captain Drake Corella, The Nightwing Drift. Defeating a dark wielder begins with knowing where they rank in age and experience. Initiates have reddish rings to their eyes that come and go depending on how often they drain. Asim's eyes fluctuate in degrees of red, and their veins distend when riled. Sages, those responsible for initiates, eyes are permanently red. Their veins perpetually distended toward their temples, expanding with age. Mavens, their generals, have never been captured for examination. Chapter 47.
So much for thinking I have the advantage. Her eyes flare like she's come to the same conclusion as we circle each other, and then they narrow in a way that makes my stomach clench.
Devera may have set the rules, but something tells me Kat is about to break them.
Does it bother you? She asks, lowering her voice as she raises her hands. Knowing he taught me first. That I had him first.
Not at all, since I have him now. I swallow the sour jealousy that rises with the burn of bile in my throat.
Really? She jabs and I weave. The thought that I know what he tastes like.
She throws another combination that I block, then retreats as if it was nothing but a test.
How his weight feels above me.
I will not vomit on this mat. I refuse.
Nope.
But shit if that picture doesn't play out in my mind as vividly as a nightmare. Her hands on his skin, her mouth on the curling lines of his rebellion relic. Envy and anger roar in my ears, dulling my senses, and I blink rapidly to clear the image, but heat prickles my skin as power rises within me. She comes at me again, and I throw my forearm up in a block, but she shifts unexpectedly, and when I block for the cross, she nails me with a left hook.
Pain explodes in my cheek, right on the bone, and I stagger backward, touching my face reflexively to check for blood, but she hasn't split the skin.
I think it does bother you, she says softly as we circle again. Seeing me here, where I belong, sleeping right down the hall. I bet it keeps you awake at night, knowing I'm a better match for him in every way, counting the seconds he tires of your frail excuse for a body and comes back to the woman who knows exactly what he likes and how he likes it. Every word she speaks raises my temperature, but I refuse to take the bait. So I'm ready when she charges forward this time, twisting as she jabs for my face. I manage to counter, landing my blow in the same location she'd hit me. Pain shoots up my wrist, but I'm happy for the sting. You know what does bother me? I ask as she bounces back on her toes, cursing when the back of her hand swipes at her cheek and comes away bloody. That you're obsessed with fighting over a man. Rage fuels my movements when I go on the attack, but she's ready for every combination I have, because they're all fucking his. You going to do something about this? I hear someone ask from outside the haze of anger that's slowing my reaction time. She wouldn't want me to. The answer comes from the edge of the mat as Kat lunges toward me, and I'm too focused on her hands to block her feet when they sweep mine out from under me. I'm airborne for a heartbeat, and then my back hits the mat, rattling my bones and stealing my breath. Kat follows me down, leaning her forearm against my throat and cutting off my air supply as she leans in, her mouth right next to my ear. You seem angry, Violet. Are you now just realizing you're nothing special? That you're just a convenient placeholder he can fuck? Her laugh is low and cruel. I know how good he is. I'm the one who taught him that little trick he does with his fingers. You know, the one where he curls, I see red and throw every ounce of my rage into the punch I deliver to the side of her ribs, right where Zayden taught me to stab, and then I draw back and do it again, savoring the dull sound of the crack of her ribs and the jarring pain that shoots through my hand, along my wrist, and up my arm because I know I just delivered 10 times worse. She cries out, falling off me to her uninjured side, and I gasp, filling my lungs before hurtling my body after hers, rising onto my knees and slamming my fist into the side of her face with a satisfying thud before she can recover. Now she has my mark on both sides. What the fuck is wrong with you? I snap. It's not my fault he doesn't love you. Of course he doesn't. She grabs hold of my arm and rolls with astonishing speed, twisting it behind my back. White-hot agony streaks through me, making my mouth water. He's not capable of loving anyone, she hisses in my ear. You think I'm so petty that I'd attack another woman over love? Yes, I force the word out through gritted teeth as she shoves me downward, controlling me by the arm she could easily break, the shoulder she's an inch away from dislocating in this position. The side of my face smashes into the mat. Think I have to think, but fuck. All I can do is feel anger and envy pound through my veins with every heartbeat, strangling logic until I'm nothing but rage. You're too short-sighted for him, she says quietly like she's afraid of being heard. He thinks ahead, just like me. Cuts, do you even know why he didn't kill you that first year? I do, because he trusted me to look ahead with him.
She knows about the deal with my mother. He told her. My fingers tingle, and I know I'll lose feeling in the entire limb soon, but that doesn't stop my body from trembling with fury, with rising power. Think. I have to think. She knows all my moves, at least the ones Zayden taught me.
Look at where we are. Ryerson House. Her mouth is close enough to my ear that I can feel how hard she's breathing. Who wouldn't love all that power and the case it comes in? But I'm sure as hell not fighting you over a man's affections. I'm going to war with you for a crown. That was the reason we were engaged. It was promised to me, and I'm not giving it to a damned Sorengale who chose to drop the flyer instead of her squad mate. Your entire family deserves to die for what you've put us through. A crown? Engaged? My chest aches because it all makes sense. Two aristocratic families in need of an alliance, and I'm nowhere near nobility. And gods, get some control over your emotions, would you? You're so fucking weak, it's pathetic. Her words are a string of hisses. Fuck her,
Rhiannon trained me, too. I rear back with my head as hard as I can, cracking cartilage from the sound of it, and the pressure vanishes from my arm and shoulder, freeing me. She yelps, the sound slightly muffled, and I thrust my uninjured elbow backward, hitting the soft tissue of her stomach, just like Rhi taught me. Blocking out the pain, I burst up onto my knees, then twist, throwing my weight onto her. She topples backward, and I take advantage of the opening, driving my knee into her sternum, then reaching for her throat. I'm going to fucking kill her. How dare she come after me? Like I had a choice in Luella's fall. Like I had anything to do with Zayden's choice to leave her. Fuck that! How dare she come after what's mine? He isn't a crown. He isn't a stepping stool for power. He isn't a tool to elevate her standing. He's everything. Her face turns a mottled shade of red and her eyes widen with panic. Violet! Someone shouts. A woman? A friend, maybe? Power sears my veins and lifts the hair on the back of my neck, rising with the force of a tornado. Her hands tear at mine, but I only squeeze harder. Damn it, Cat! Someone else yells from the opposite side. Tap out! Tap out? I don't want her to submit. I want her to cease existing. I honestly don't care if you kill her, Violence. Zayden's voice filters through the rage that holds me with the same unbreakable grip I'm using to choke the life out of my opponent. But you will. I blink as his words clear just enough of the fog for me to feel the slowing of her pulse beneath my hands, but I don't release my grip. Tap! Multiple people shout. I respect whatever choice you make. But I'm not making a choice. There is no choice. There's only the swirling, chaotic vortex of anger and jealousy and... She's fucking cheating! Using mind work! Get out of my head! I scream so loudly my throat burns. Cat glares up at me, and the anger burns even hotter as she tries to work her thumbs beneath my hands, wrath burning in her eyes. She's not going to tap out. She'd rather die than lose to me. I don't want to kill her. I have to let go, but my hands don't get the signal. Then don't. His voice wraps around my mind, and the anger ebbs just enough to let me realize he's here. It's been a week since I've seen him, and he's here. And I love him more than I hate her. I yank my hands from her throat, but I can't make my body move any farther than that. I need your help. Cat wheezes for breath as heavy footsteps approach from the left. Zayden's arms surround me, lifting me to my feet, and I cling to the love I feel for him with my fucking fingernails to keep from letting the anger consume me. I didn't tap out! Cat croaks as she scurries backward, her neck bearing my handprints. Ryerson, Devera snaps. Why would you interfere in a chal- Because she cheated, Imogen shouts. She used mind work. She's the one who's unhinged. Cat's voice breaks multiple times, and she jabs her finger at me. I'm unhinged? I'll show you unhinged when I kill you for fucking with my head. I lunge against Zayden's arms, but he holds tight. Let me know if you actually mean it. He lifts me off my feet. Catriona, Professor Keandra forces her way through the line of flyers. Tell me you didn't. She glances from Cat to me and back again. Let go, Cat. Fuck her. Pure hatred emanates from every line of Cat's body and only fuels the fire beneath my skin. And fuck her entire family. I hope you all die for what you've done to us. Surging against Zayden's strength does no good. He has me locked down, but power whips through me and releases with a searing crack. Lightning strikes simultaneously with thunder, flashing white across my vision. Cadets scream and the scent of smoke fills the air. Zayden flings a hand outward, and shadows stream toward the wooden bleachers, snuffing out the quickly growing flames. Bragan, Marin, escort Catriona to her room, Keandra orders. Her gift is limited by distance, I know. Zayden swings me up over his shoulder like I'm a bag of grain. Ryerson! Rhiannon calls out, catching his attention before tossing the conduit to him. He catches it one-handed, nods, then strides for the exit. Every instinct tells me to kick, to thrash, to beat him into letting me go, but I force myself to stay completely still as he carries me out into the hall, past the gaping faces of leadership who line the walls, waiting for the challenge period to be over. It will ease, Zayden promises. And it does. The fog of Cat's power fades with every step, leaving me raw, like the ruins of a beach after a tidal wave recedes.
Gods, how am I going to keep this from happening again?
Zayden doesn't even break a sweat as he walks past the great hall, then surprises me when he doesn't turn into the foyer. Nope, he carries me straight into the assembly chamber, startling the four who are gathered there, including Brennan. And I'm in control of enough of my emotions to feel every ounce of the embarrassment that heats my face, but my body still vibrates with anger. At least it's my own genuine anger this time.
What are you? My brother starts. Get out, Zayden demands, crossing the room and climbing the steps of a new dais, where the chairs of the assembly sit behind the long formal table. All of you, right fucking now.
They glance at one another, then shock me to my toes by doing exactly that, grabbing a stack of parchment from the corner table and leaving, shutting the door behind them on their way out.
Zayden tosses the conduit into the massive middle chair before lowering me, my body sliding against his until my toes touch the dais. When our gazes collide, he arches his scarred brow.
She got you good.
He reaches for my face, turning my head gently to examine my cheek.
But I think you got the last word.
And how many of those humiliating words did you hear?
I don't want the answer, but I need them. All of them. Fuck.
An excerpt from Public Notice 628.86, transcribed by Cirilla Neilwart. As a result of the Treaty of Aracia, the power to represent the province of Tirindor in the King's Scenarium has hereby been transferred from the House of Ryerson to the House of Llewellyn. Chapter 48.
The things she said. I clench my aching fists and notice I've busted the skin across my knuckles.
I know.
His gaze rakes over me in a look I know all too well, assessing me for injuries. She said I'm just a convenient placeholder for you to fuck.
I heard.
How hurt are you? I'm fine. Unless he's asking about my pride. My shoulder's a little pissed, but I think my face took the worst of it.
All right.
He wraps his arm around my waist, pulls our lower bodies flush, and moves forward, forcing me to step back so the backs of my thighs hit the chair behind me.
Sit.
Sit. I just lost my shit and threw my control out the window in front of the entire quadrant because of the venom she spewed, the emotion she shoved down my throat, and all you have to say is sit?
He lowers his head, invading my space.
Nothing I could say right now is going to erase her words from your head. So sit, Violence. We'll do the talking afterward.
Fine. I sink down onto the thick cushion, and my feet come off the ground. This particular piece of furniture was definitely built for someone Zayden's height. Two of me could sit in this thing.
She wants you for your name.
I know.
He braces his hands on the arms of the chair and leans in, brushing his lips over mine.
And you love me in spite of it. That's one of the many reasons I will always choose you.
He drops to his knees in front of me and works the laces on my boots with quick, efficient movements.
What are you doing?
His mouth curves in a wicked smile that instantly elevates my pulse and transforms the heat of anger simmering in my body into an even hotter fire. My lips part as one boot hits the dais, the other